E1.
Number 6B.
In the field of physics, they begin to see, if you read Heisenberg, if you read that wonderful man, Weizsäcker, who has won the Nobel Prize for physics, who is now teaching philosophy, they all come to the realization that down, if you investigate matter properly and clear enough, you always arrive at the point where it is idea, or where it changes over to idea. Not that matter is idea, but that you finally come to the conclusion that all is idea, and that matter is just a misunderstanding of idea. And Heisenberg brought that out very nicely in one of his big talks, that really idea is a whole structure, and not just a substantial, a divine substantial part or atomistic fact. Just as we have all sorts of ideas and we regard these ideas in a divinely substantial way, they are much more than that. They are whole structures. And to see that is really quite a thrill. And finally, I haven't touched on that, and I'm not going to touch on it too deeply or say not at all, namely that structure demands a complete new logic. It demands a logic that deviates from the classical Aristotelian logic, the two-value logic, and really demands that logic which Mrs. Eddy used. You see, it's always so that in the old times, when thinkers, philosophers, and so on, theologians, were reading science and health, they always had one great criticism against Mrs. Eddy and the textbook, that they said, this woman does not know anything about logic. She is illogical. Though she speaks about logic and though she gives some logical terms and syllogisms and so on, her big discovery has another logic than the old classical logic. It's a one-valued logic, whereas the old classical logic is a two-valued logic. And therefore they can't understand her. But today, with the new sense of structure, they must use more than the old classical logic. And therefore even logic changes today, and the logic they use today is the logic that Mrs. Eddy has used 100 years ago. And I would like to see a paper written by some of the students who know logic and who have shown me through the logic language how really Mrs. Eddy has known logic the way they only begin to realize it today in the academic field. Yes, I think in this way I tried more or less in a roundabout way to depict the new paradigm with which we want to work, the paradigm that says, instead of reading the textbook atomistically, we should approach it structurally. Structurally means that we approach it with a consciousness that is structured and not with an atomistic spiritual consciousness. But that means that also we have to train ourselves to think very, very differently. Namely, as we have seen, in relation and relationship. Now, we want to proceed and touch on the great question of law. We have seen that structure demands structural laws, and therefore we should ask ourselves, what are the divine laws. You know very well that Mrs. Eddy uses the term law in the textbook and in your writing quite often. I think about 300 times alone in the textbook. Puts very great stress on the fact that there are laws. But when you ask and go through all those references and ask yourself, what are these laws? You may find quite a bit of difficulty in finding out what these laws are. Usually it's just stated that there are laws, that there are laws of God, but what they are, that she doesn't state so explicitly. In one or the other way, she indicates what these laws are, but actually we are a bit at sea until we begin to investigate her textbook in a structured way. Then the laws just fall out of the textbook one by one. They just drop out by the dozens. And so we will investigate that. Now, let us be aware. What would we feel of any textbook? Say of a textbook of mathematics that would say that mathematics has laws and that these laws are eternal and these laws are good. Would we know the laws? Could we calculate? We couldn't. In other words, we would have to know exactly the elements of such laws. We would have to be able to define what are the elements and what are the relationships within a definite law. And only then, really, would we have a clear concept of a law. But this is very difficult to see in its first investigation of the textbook. And therefore, I have been asking all my life, no, not all my life, that's really not right, but let's say since my university years, I was constantly asking myself, what are those laws of which Mrs. Eddy speaks in the textbook? One can't just say there are laws and the laws of God and nobody knows what the laws of God are. And I would say that actually with some few exemptions, also Mr. Dawley didn't teach laws. Actually this question did not arise at his time. And I was very close with Mr. Dawley, especially in the years that were important for the whole development of the idea. So that we can see that compared with that age, to ask the question of laws is a new paradigm too. If a question has always swept under the carpet, and it has been swept under the carpet because every time one was saying, well, tell me, what are the laws? Tell me, come on, tell me, what are these laws of God? Tell me how they are stated, tell me the elements of each law, tell me how these laws vary from each other. What is the difference between these laws, if she uses laws in the plural? Give me the elements, give me the relationships. Naturally, these questions were never asked. And we have seen that a new paradigm asks new questions. It doesn't answer the old question, it asks new questions and therefore also have to answer new questions. And I would say that for about 25 years I was asking these new questions and didn't get a single answer. I can think back, say at the middle of the 30s that I began to ask these questions and I didn't find any answer until about 1960 when I began to study the minor prophets, and when I suddenly was asking a question about what I felt is an anomaly, and I didn't sweep it under the floor, and I didn't just feel that this is not important, but when I suddenly felt something would be very, very important. And so from that time on, really, the question of law and the answers, what laws are, came into focus. And perhaps you know, if you have read my book on the prophetic era, the minor prophets, you see that I state every prophet in the form of a law. I don't want to go into it. I can do that next year or the second next year. But you know that I stated their laws and stated them in their elements, very clear-cut elements. That was such a terrific change that nobody understood my book. Nobody understood my book. They read it in the old paradigm. They read it in the old paradigm of a Bible interpretation. Because Mr. Dolley has interpreted the Bible over years and years and has published about 6,000 pages on Bible interpretation and has left only very little to his students for interpretation because he had done more or less all. And so when I picked up that little remnant that was left on the Old Testament, a few of the minor prophets, they just all thought, well, he is now interpreting the rest that was left over from John Dolley. But I did something completely different. So can you see what it does if one is not used to a new paradigm, when one is not used to approach suddenly a subject from a completely different standpoint? So all those who bought my books just felt, ooh, it's nice, but it's the old story of interpreting biblical symbolism into metaphysical symbolism. That's that. They didn't see that that was not my purpose of that book. But I was thrilled beyond words. I just remember those years I felt like a king having discovered, I don't know what, you know, to discover for the first time laws and how to formulate laws and how to state laws within the bigger framework of the Christ matrix at that time. And that was the beginning of investigating more and more the question of law. So if we spend a few days now on laws, we must be aware that this is a new paradigm, that it is asking new questions, that it is answering new questions, but that it also demands a different approach, a completely different approach to the subject. Now, last year we already touched a bit on law and have seen that we have, so to say, two big categories of laws, which we would call the categories, the laws of isness or of being, and the laws of processes. That you can state a law of something that is, but that you also can have laws about something that has a process. These are two big categories. And if one take Black's Law Dictionary, you find this in his definition. He says, for instance, that law is that which is laid down, ordained, or established. A rule or method according to which phenomena or actions coexist. These would be the isness laws, they coexist, or follow each other. These would be the laws of process. A law which shows how something follows something else and so on. Whereas the laws of isness just show how phenomena coexist together. And we will have to do with both categories of laws when we go through the chart, that we will find laws of isness and that we will find laws of process. Webster says, among others, about law, that law is a statement of an order or relation of phenomena. An order of relation of phenomena. That so far as it is known is invariable under the given condition. So that's the nature of a law, huh? That it is invariable under the given condition. Therefore, when we will go through those laws, we will have to state those laws in their elements and see that if we want to apply these laws, that we have to stick to them invariably and not try to change them constantly as we are used in the religious thinking. So that they are invariable under the given condition. Say, if the condition is that we are thinking on the level of divine science, for instance, then that is the given condition. Then we have, within that condition, invariable laws. So that we can find, for all levels of consciousness, invariable laws. The Random House Dictionary of the English language gives another definition which I feel is one of the best for us. It reads that a law is a rule, principle, or convention regarded as governing the structure or the relationship of an element in the structure, or the relationship of an element in the structure of something. Shall I read it again? That law is a rule, principle, or convention regarded as governing the structure or the relationship of an element in the structure of something. So actually we can see that the law is that which can govern the structure. It's a structural law. Or that it is a law that governs the relationship of one element within that whole, within something, that element in relationship to the whole structure. And these are the big laws that we will consider. Yes. Now, it's quite interesting to really go through the concordance and look up all the statements Mrs. Eddy makes in Science and Health and in prose work on law and laws, and to analyze it a little bit and to see what she says. I just pick out a few things to show that actually she does not say really very much about it. If one regards law in relationship to God, which is one of the main characteristics of a writing, that she couples law with God, you can see that she really has four different kinds of relationship, which would somehow be in accordance with the word Christ, Christianity, and science. Namely, she says, God is the law maker. That would be the word. He's the law maker. In the Christ, she says, God is the law giver. He gives the law. In Christianity, she says, God is the only law of creation. That's Christianity, the universe, the law of creation. And in science, she has that term that she says, God is the only law of being, small b. Well, you can see that if you take these statements about God and law, that you don't know very much afterwards. You only know that God makes law, and that God gives law, and that the creation of God has laws, and that is the law of being. And yet you don't know the first thing, what these laws are. So they are not really revealing very much. She even makes that very important statement that she says, God is a law to himself. Is a law to himself. And that perhaps is that statement which can give us a clue how to go about in order to find hidden away in secret secrecy the laws that are embedded in science and health. Even when you ask what is the connection between law, the laws of God, and science, because you have a feeling that law has to do with science, one doesn't get really a great measure of information, because she just says, science is the law of God. So you get a little bit more of information instead of just saying that God is the lawmaker and the lawgiver. She says that that law of God is really science. And that naturally builds a bridge and says, therefore the whole realm of science is the law of God. But science is a big field. It's a field of system, categories, structures, and so on, so that that already somehow indicates, okay, science is the law of God. But she also says, Christian science is the law of God, not only science. And one can see that because she goes on and saying, interpreting and demonstrating the divine principle and the rule of harmony. So one already finds, the moment she combines with the law of God Christian science, then she means that these laws will be those laws that regulate the relationship of the divine principle with the demonstration and interpretation of that principle, bringing out the harmony of being. And so you can go through those texts, but actually one doesn't find very much on the first attempt, except perhaps the laws of the synonymous terms, which I want to take really later on.